Mark chapter 5, begin at verse 24 and read through 34. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him, and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind, and touched his garment. For she said, "If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole." And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said unto him, "Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who toucheth me?" He looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, "Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague." This ends the reading of God's holy and inspired word. This Lord's Day morning, we come again in a series of messages on financial stewardship to the 11th message on spending, third message on spending, actually. We'll consider spending in relationship to medical expenses, recreation, and education. But just a quick review, after discussing thinking about money, we talked about seven things were to do with money. Who can help me with what those seven things were? Who can name one of them? One of you men.
Save.
What else?
Spend.
What else?
Giving.
Invest.
Returning.
I heard paying. One more. Something you got to do before you do all that, all the other things with the money. Yeah, earn it or make it, right? Good. And earning's probably a better word than making, because I'm not encouraging you to get printing presses, so start printing anything. I'm suggesting the Bible tells us to earn it, right? And remember the difference between saving and investing, at least the difference that I sought to make. Which one of you men could explain that difference between saving and investing money? Anybody remember that distinction? Okay. Okay, good. So saving is basically self-insuring yourself for big expenses, right? Saving that money for those big expenditures. Investing is saving for your own semi-retirement, because let's say you never fully retire, but you might retire from your major income source, or inheritance, or potentially the need to recompense or requite your parents in their elderly stage in terms of health. So, good. Seven things. We're again in spending. Next Lord's Day, Lord willing, we'll complete the series by considering implementing our financial plans. We talked about financial planning weeks ago. And we'll kind of try to wrap that up as we've looked at these seven areas of making and how to spend or expend money. This morning we come to medical, recreation, and education. And as we begin, I want to quote R.L. Dabney again on his work on Christian, I forget the title of it exactly, but it is relative to Christian stewardship. Now listen to Dabney. He says, "The awakening of the Christian conscience of the church to the truth and to its duty." He's in reference to stewardship, Christian stewardship. "The awakening of the Christian conscience of the church to the truth and to its duty would reduce all Christians to a life of comfortable simplicity, embellished among those possessed with taste by natural and inexpensive elegance." Now, you could read those words and think Dabney was going a little too far, and I would contend maybe he was. I mean, he probably leans on the Spartan side of things. He probably had a Spartan personality. Probably I do. But I think he's getting at something. He's basically saying in his day and age, he could see the excess and the frivolity of ostentatious spending on the part of Christians. The South was very, very wealthy before the war between the states. Louisiana was actually the most wealthy state before the war between the states. Things radically changed after, I believe South Carolina was second in terms of GNP per person. So he recognized that, and I think we ought to consider that if we really think about Christian stewardship, it will tend, he's recognizing that there are people that are possessed with more taste than others, but he's suggesting even those that have more refined taste and culture are still going to be most impressed with what he calls natural and inexpensive elegance. They're going to be aesthetically sensitive, but they're also going to be sensitive to the fact that what they have is God's, it's not theirs. And so they would be very careful in how it's expended. So let's talk about medicine first. Biblical principles related to medical expenses. This is a quick survey of, I think, the major principles about medicine and about health. First, Genesis 2, 16 and 17. I can't read all these passages. But clearly, the penalty for the fall, we're told, is death. Not just spiritual death, but physical death. And so death and sickness is ultimately due to the fall. First major principle. James 5, 14 and 16 inform us, and if someone's ill, they should call for the elders, and the elders are to come and pray and lay hands on them. But we're also informed that if they've sinned, they should confess that sin, and they'll be forgiven, and they'll be healed. So it informs us that sometimes specific sins have the effect of physical illness. Notice I said sometimes. Because in 2 Corinthians 12, 7, I believe we learn all physical illness is not due to specific sin. Paul's thorn in the flesh. It's in the flesh. I think clearly whatever that thorn was, it was related to Paul's physical well-being. He was hindered physically, and God didn't release him from it. A man of faith prayed three times, was never informed it was due to any particular sin of his. I think we also see that same principle in 2 Timothy 4:20, verse B. Paul had been the instrument, just as the other apostles had been, of healing. The apostles had the unique, extraordinary gift of healing, and yet he could say in 2 Timothy 4:20, Trompius, have I left at Miletus sick? He could have used Trompius in the gospel ministry. He could have sent him to Ephesus, but he has to tell Timothy he's got to stay at Miletus right now. He's sick. In other words, I can't just zap it. There were times when the apostles would miraculously be used of God to heal people. There were also plenty of times where they didn't. Jesus didn't heal everybody that was sick in Jerusalem or in all of the Holy Land. We also see, I think, from 3 John 2, that it's right to desire one's good health. Because we're told that John desired Gaius's good health. So if it's right to have a good wish for one's spiritual as well as physical prosperity, it's right for us to desire that for ourselves. Now here in Mark, we have this event of this woman who is extremely ill. She's healed of Christ through her faith. I think we are to understand in the physical healings of the Gospels, what we see is the external, but it's a picture of the internal wholeness. This woman's a woman of faith, and so she was converted. She was born anew, and she came to Christ in faith, and she was healed internally and externally. She was baptized by the Spirit, she was spiritually circumcised, and she was made whole. But notice, she suffered many things of many physicians. So what does that tell us? Sounds like all physicians weren't very successful. It also informs us that she was very desirous to be healed, but no man could heal her. No man that was but man, except for the God-man. We also learn in Matthew 9:12, in the parallel passages in Mark 2 and Luke 5, we read, "They that be whole need not a physician." In other words, those that are healthy or whole, they don't need a physician. Not everybody needs a physician all the time, but when you're not whole, you very well may need a physician. In other words, we're told what a physician's job is. They're to seek to restore physical wholeness. But they are also to recognize that physical wholeness is intimately connected to spiritual wholeness. And even Presbyterian Hospital in Charlotte recognizes that a little bit. They still pay some deference to ministers. We don't pay for parking. We have a room set aside that we can go study between visits. We get free coffee and free drinks. It's not much, but it's something. They have still have some recognition that a person's spiritual well-being and their physical well-being are intimately connected. And they want to promote, though it's multi-faith, granted, they want to promote that aspect because they realize that aspect is part of men created in God's image. So though physicians don't always have all the answers and sometimes they even suffer people many things as people try to go get their maladies fixed, yet in Colossians 4:14 we're told that Luke was the beloved physician. So we're informed that the medical profession is a lawful profession. It's a godly profession. It ought to be carried out in a godly fashion. There's a reason for it. And it's rooted all the way back to the fall and the effects of the fall, not only on our spiritual death, but on physical death. So let me give you some practical suggestions regarding expenditures related to medicine. You need to consider medical insurance. Can you sustain, I don't think many of us can, the costs of serious medical, serious medical condition. So how are you going to have medical insurance? You have to consider medical payments. Do you need to anticipate expenses? There are some medical treatments or services that you're planning to need or your family may need. Whether it's planning for a birth, whether it's planning for having your tonsils taken out or your wisdom teeth removed, your children's wisdom teeth removed, or the like, those expenses ought to be considered in your longer-term planning, whether it's a year plan, five-year plan. Got to consider making deductions at work. Most work companies have that offering where you can put that money aside tax-free. I believe the law is you have to use it or lose it at the end of the year. So you obviously have to be careful about how much money you set aside in one of those accounts. But you can pay for much of your medical expenses with non-tax dollars if you do that. So anticipate, consider setting aside some in savings or through a plan which allows you to spend your medicine money or medical money tax-free. Another one, don't use doctors excessively. They can't necessarily fix all your problems, can they? But at the same time, I'd have to say, don't delay a doctor's visit. That's a fine edge, isn't it? To realize that you have some aches and pains that you're probably going to have to live with and you just can't go to the doctor every time you have a little ache and pain. And yet at the same time, we all know of situations where somebody had a little ache or pain and they waited a month or a year or longer and at that point the condition was such that it significantly shortened their life or affected their quality of life. So we've got to be very wise, don't we, on these things. God would have us to take care of our bodies and yet we have to recognize that due to the fall we have aches and pains and we'll have to live with them. So it's a very delicate balance. As well, I'd encourage us to consider prevention. do all we can, within reason, to be physically healthy. Eat well, exercise, get adequate sleep. If you're not, do what you can or get some help medically to do what you can to get adequate sleep. Also shop around for medical services as well as for prescriptions. I won't say too much about generic drugs. Obviously, can save a lot of money. At some level, I still wonder somehow how are medical companies going to do the research and development that they need, but I do buy generic nonetheless. But obviously, there is some money that needs to be spent on research so that many of the maladies that we face may be at least ameliorated a little bit by medicine. So there are the items, biblical principles, practical suggestions relative to medical expenses. Any questions, any comments? I'm sure it's not exhaustive. If somebody has something significant, any gentleman, I'd really appreciate it. Anything? I'm going to say recreation next is connected to our concerns about medical expenses and our health. That is, not only should we eat well and exercise and get adequate sleep, I would contend we also ought to consider recreation and its appropriate place in our emotional and physical well-being. At the same time, we have to acknowledge we are a society addicted to entertainment. And the Bible promotes productivity, but we live in a culture that promotes sloth and the worshiping of leisure time. Therefore, I've sought to define this category as recreation, not entertainment, for a good reason. Now, because recreation means as Spurgeon said, I untension the bow. I release the tension on the bow to be relaxed and to have a little time and diversion so that I can restring the bow and the bow remains prepared. I'm diverting so that I might more effectively be involved in God's service in the future. And so, recreation is in God's will, and it's for our good. Genesis 1, 28 through 26 through 28 informs us that our foci, that's the plural of focus, is related to labor and family. We're called to have dominion and we're called to raise a seed. And that godly, if we can compare Scripture with Scripture and go to Malachi chapter 3. We see in Ecclesiastes 5, 18 and 19, Psalm 128, 2 and 3, that the man who fears the Lord will be zealous as he is capable physically of diligent labor to God's glory, productivity, which will be blessed, will be a blessing to him and his family. So they're blessed in the hard labor and the earning, but also blessed and then the expenditures of that earning within the family sphere. The godly man is not called to earn so he can spend significant portions of his accumulated wealth on himself apart from his family. But it is so his accumulated wealth can be distributed to his family for their enjoyment under God and to God's glory. But we still have passages like Proverbs 21:17. I believe I read this when we considered food. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. We have the general principle in the first phrase, he that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. That's the general principle. Then Solomon applies it to a couple specifics. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. That's just one way which to seek pleasure. But if you love pleasure, you're likely to spend more of God, the money that God's given you on it than you ought. And that's really what I believe is the paradox of Epicureanism. We We learn of it in Proverbs 27:7. The full soul loatheth an honeycomb, but to the hungry soul everything is sweet. In other words, the paradox of Epicureanism is that too much pleasure reduces the amount of pleasure you have. Eventually, that's not sufficient. And it's to the hungry soul, it's to the laboring soul that then is hungry, that then appreciates everything that God has given. But to the slothful soul, that's on the dole, that's getting handouts, the handouts are never enough. There's always more, more, more. I need a bigger handout tomorrow and a bigger one the next day. But to the laboring soul that then is hungry through the labor, everything that God provides is sweet. It's delightful. Now let me give you a little counsel from Robert Bolton on general directions for a comfortable walking with God. His first counsel is that these recreations be not, he says, costly, cruel, engrossers of time, and not encroach upon heavenly comforts. Not costly, not cruel, not engrossers of time, not encroach upon heavenly comforts. As he relates to costliness, he ends up talking about gambling. Quite often, recreation and gambling to the worldling get connected, don't they? When he speaks about cruelty, he's actually referring to common things that were prevalent amongst the English at the time. They still go on in backwoods in our country. There's a fairly famous quarterback that was recently involved in dog fighting, right? But they're cockfighting and other kinds of cruel so-called entertainment. He's saying we shouldn't be involved in that. We should also beware of it engrossing our time and dominating our time. It's a time to recreate, but it's not all the time, or most of the time. And it also shouldn't hinder our spiritual walk. It shouldn't encroach upon our heavenly comforts. This is what Robert Bolton says. Thousands there are who plunge themselves over head and ears in courses of pleasure, which they call recreations, wherein they very unworthily and woefully waste the fat and marrow, as it were, of dear and precious time, the flower of their age, the strength of their bodies, melt the vigor of their spirits into effeminacy. Get that? Sensuality and lust drown the fair and goodly hopes of their education, the honor of their families, the expectation of the country, the improvement of their parts in froth and folly, as though they were placed on earth as Leviathan in the sea, only to take their sport and pastime therein. He says they're just like the fish of the sea. They think they just come into this world to just have a good time all the time. And what he's doing is he's commenting on the slothfulness, the excess of leisure in a society that was reaping the benefits of the Puritan work ethic and had only been in place for 100 years or so in England. And already the negative effects of it in terms of its abuse was being manifest among the people. Again, Dabney, here's the title of his work, Principles of Christian Economy. Listen to this. He says, the artificial and expensive pursuit of the fine arts, as it is seen in luxurious society, tends only to substitute in place of true sensibility a nauseous affectation of taste, concealing callousness as truly brutal as that of the vandal. The truest and most wholesome indulgences of taste are those which nature presents to us at least cost. Luxurious elegances deprave this capacity of our soul as truly as they waste God's property. Now again, I would contend Dabney may be a little on the Spartan side of things. I'm not saying he struck the perfect biblical balance. But I do think he's insightful into seeing that there's many luxurious things and artificial and expensive pursuits of fine arts, he says, that are but nauseous affectation of taste. I've seen some of that when we used to regularly go to some of the concerts downtown. And some of them were great in terms of the music. But then there were other pieces, more modern pieces, that were clearly not consistent with a biblical worldview. That everybody that was there at the previous ones were there clapping and failed to see the radical difference between true and music that's consistent with a biblical worldview of order and what's consistent with a worldview of chaos and discordance. But the wealthy in our city, for the most part, are not able to tell the difference. And in that sense, it is but nauseous affectation of taste. Some practical suggestions about recreation. Remember, entertainment may be recreation, but not necessarily so. Entertainment may be recreation, but not necessarily so. Entertainment may, and you may use it to encourage your creation with a small c in terms of promoting your vigor in glorifying God and other things, but it could actually detract from that. I would also encourage you to consider including your expenses for eating out as part of recreation. In other words, your food budget is really what you need to maintain good health. But your recreation budget is that which is above and beyond what you need and your family needs to maintain good health. It is that which is above and beyond that. So it's not absolutely necessary. I'd also encourage you to not recreate on money you do not have. And it's bad enough. It's a problematic enough to swipe a card and spend money you don't have on anything. But how much more on recreation? Don't go take a vacation when you don't have the money to pay for it. Because you will be paying for it at a lot higher prices with interest than you think you're paying for it. Just think about spending the money and tacking on an 18% charge for, let's say it takes you 2-3 years to pay off. And just realize every time you do that, you're paying at least twice or more than what the actual dollar amount comes up on the screen. Also, do not try to escape problems by recreation. Don't think you can drown your sorrows in recreation or entertainment. I'd also encourage you, women in particular, don't be bought off. I've been around long enough and have counseled enough families and husbands and wives to know that, you know, the solution to an issue that you have with your husband is not him bringing something home for you, bringing you a present that he can't afford or you can't afford home. That doesn't solve the issue, does it? Or a weekend away doesn't solve the issue if you're not willing to deal with the issue on the weekend away or deal with the issue before you take the weekend away. I would also remind us that quality family time can be had inexpensively. It doesn't have to cost a lot to have a diversion and have a good time together with those we love. Again, let me quote from Henry Scudder and his work called The Christian's Daily Walk. He says, "Whatsoever your diversions be, you must so recreate the outer man that you be no worse, but rather better in the inward man. For God hath set such a blessed order in all things that the meanest being," I think we could say the meanest being means any created thing, God has established, he says, a blessed order in all things, that any created being, any created thing lawfully used shall not hinder, but assist us in all the best things. In other words, God's placed everything, he's created everything for our good. He goes on to say, in all recreations, you must propose the right end. Sound familiar, children? Chief end? This is the right end. In all recreations, you must propose the right end. The nearest and immediate end is to revive your weary body and to quicken your dull mind. But your highest and principal end is that with this refreshed body and quickened spirit, you may better serve and glorify God. So in our recreations, we can glorify God in them as we remember why we are, as he says, refreshing our body and quickening our spirits, refreshing our minds, taking a break from the labors that we're involved in God's service. Any questions about recreation or comments? It's not that clear, is it? It's a razor's edge, isn't it? It takes a lot of prayerful, thoughtful consideration as to how God would have us each. Yes, Dan. Okay, well, I can tell you that probably there's some of us that say I need a vacation and go on that way too quickly, but I think there's probably some of us here, and I won't mention names, that probably should have taken a vacation a long time ago and haven't. You know, so you can fall in the either ditch, the right side or the left side. Certainly the Lord has given us one day in seven to a holy rest, which isn't just total abandonment to just lay around. It's still a work. It's still labor, but it's a diversion, isn't it, from the labor that we're called to glorify God in all things. But he tells us to glorify him in a unique way on the Sabbath day in relationship to the other 6 days. And the fourth commandment doesn't just tell us about what we're supposed to do on one day of the week. It tells us what we're supposed to do on all seven and informs us that we're doing different things. And so I think from that Sabbath principle, you can build upon it the principle of the need for rest. But I think we have to, just as we have to plan our expenditures, we have to plan our time. We need to make sure we have a little bit of rest every day and a little bit of rest every week, a little bit of rest every month, a little bit of rest every year. And then sometimes in the throw of things, we may have laid a plan for what we expect our weeks and months and years to be like, and sometimes there's such a deluge that comes upon us of labor and a burden that we maybe didn't expect. We had no idea that this trauma was going to occur in our family or whatever it might be, or this opportunity to reap a lot of benefits, financial benefits. Ooh, this is available, but I have to go work a lot of hours to get that customer and to get that sale. Didn't plan that in January, but in August it's going to take a lot of time for me to get that. I choose to do that, then I'm going to have to readjust my plan. When I'm done, we need to go away for a few days. And then how can we go away for as many days as we need on how much money we can afford to go and be able to glorify God in it? So it is a razor's edge, I think. Yes. Yeah, well, I think it can be on all days. I mean, I think it could say there's different degrees of recreation. You know, so it could be a little unwinding every day. I think there should be a little unwinding every day, as well as on a weekly basis. I think we need to be wise in terms of what the Puritans were getting at in terms of recreation on the Lord's Day as well. Some in Reformed circles have taken it to the point that they will not go out and take a walk on the Lord's Day. I think most of you know, if you've had small children, I think you recognize the difficulties of their abilities to maintain and keep the Lord's Day appropriately. So even there, I suggested you can have little diversions on the Lord's Day as you're raising your children to certain ages. We're called to be like our Heavenly Father who knows our children's frame. And so that's going to take some wisdom to how to do that, how to give them a little diversion and get some fresh air, get outside and go for a little walk so that they can be reinvigorated for the rest of the day. And that takes a lot of wisdom. Education, quickly. Biblical basis. Ephesians 6:4, fathers, bring them up, or literally nurture them. And it doesn't just say nurture their spirits or nurture their spiritual side. It says nurture them. In other words, nurture them in the totality of their humanity. And if we consider Luke 2:52, and we consider Jesus' growth, we find that He increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and with man. So from that passage, we at least learn of four distinct areas of personality, human personality: intellect, spirit or soul, social, emotional needs, as well as physical nurture. I think that informs us, fathers, that we have a responsibility to educate our children intellectually as well as spiritually, as well as socially and physically. So here in education, I'm speaking predominantly of intellectual education, but there also may be expenses related to physical education or social. You may have to expend some money for your children to be exposed to some social opportunities that you want them to. You may have to spend some money for them to be exposed to some sports or whatever that you think is helpful for their physical development and enjoyment. It can be development and enjoyment. It can be both recreation and, so to speak, physical education. I'm speaking mainly of intellectual education. Our forefathers viewed a liberal arts education as important. When they talked of arts, they were talking about the disciplines of the curriculum. When they spoke of liberal arts, they weren't speaking of liberalism as we think of, but they were speaking about an education which freed its students up, which promoted liberty, which made them able and helped them to be able to think clearly so that they weren't pawns of a domineering dictator or an oppressive state. And so we ought to be giving our children a liberal education so they learn to think straight and think biblically. Because without that, our children won't be able to maintain their liberties, their God-given liberties. So we have to, in that, we also, beyond preparing them to think straight so that they're not pawns of the state, social robots, we also have to prepare them for a vocation. Uniquely, our sons for vocations outside the home and our daughters for work generally in the home, focused around the home. And that is going to involve preparing them intellectually in various branches of education. Again, R.L. Dabney. This is kind of interesting. He's been calling for great thrift on recreation and other expenses. And as I said, maybe he's not completely balanced. I'm not trying to sell this position as the given, you know, as the biblical position exactly. But this is what he says about education. This guy's been very thrifty on everything else. He says this about education. Every useful branch of education, all training by which mind and body are endued with a higher efficiency for God's service, should be secured, cost what it might. Every branch of education, all training, now he's giving a synonym for education, by which the mind and body are endued with a higher efficiency for God's service, should be secured, cost what it might. So if your physical education, your intellectual education is a help to promote your godly service, then he's saying it's well worth the cost. Some practical suggestions. Plan for tuition, text, and travel expenses. If you're going to send your child to a school or occasionally or even daily, you need to consider what the tuition is, but also what are the additional costs. There are other costs besides just the tuition. You need to consider those. You also need to consider the travel expense. So recognize what the full expense is for all the things. The textbooks, the supplies, whatever other fees there are besides the tuition, besides the cost of traveling and taking them or them taking themselves if they're of age to drive. Do whatever you can to pay cash. In other words, avoid student loans, particularly if your children are going to send them to college, encourage you to avoid student loans if at all possible. Also, I know North Carolina has an educational savings plan. If you're planning to send your children and to college and expect to have significant college expenses, you can defer savings in those accounts so you're not paying taxes on that money that goes in there. Also, the interest in all that, just as a 401k, is not taxable. So it is a good way to get started in further education. Also, consider local colleges. We certainly have an advantage of being in a relatively large metropolitan area and also in a fairly unique state. Our state has many, many problems, but it does have, I would say, with Virginia, one of the best public systems intellectually for the money. If you look on any of those ratings of UVA or its medical college or its law college in North Carolina, they're up there. They're a little bit below the Ivy League schools, but they're in the ballpark, and they are relatively inexpensive for those that live in state. And we do have University of North Carolina, Charlotte, which does have an engineering school and does have a significant business school and others. It may not cover everything, but it does. It's there, and it allows your children to potentially stay at home longer, reducing costs significantly, especially housing costs. Also consider online degree programs. There's many of those that are blossoming, and that allows you to pick and choose the classes that your children take, and they can pick and choose. So it allows them to, and you to help them keep away from some of the things that they might not want them to be exposed to in their higher education. And again, allows them to be at home. And I think that's particularly prudent for our young women as we try to prepare them for their calling that God has called them to. Any questions? Comments? I know it's been relatively cursory. I mean, any of these things could be delved into, and there are a lot of sticky questions, but I hope that I've brought a lot of principles to bear and at least gets us thinking about glorifying God and spending money in our medical expenses, our recreational expenses, as well as educational expenses. Let me close with a word of prayer.